Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio. We are the happiest place on earth because we drink heavily. That's all there is to it. First of all, I need to apologize for my July 3rd show. I became angry at some of the people in the chat room and challenged them to call in with their real names and say their opinions to my face. That was uncalled for. It was unprofessional on my part and just about everything else. So please accept my apologies. All I ask is if you disagree with me, say your reason in the chat room. Don't call and accuse my guests of being clueless or things like that. Just be nice about it. And afterwards, we'll all get together, hold hands, and sing Kumbaya. We will. Cheryl McCollum is here from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. And Cheryl, what a day it was. Sabrina Fulton, Trayvon's mom, said it was Trayvon screaming. The defense opened up their case with George's mother, Gladys Zimmerman, saying the screams were from her son, George. We didn't think this would happen, did we? We didn't.
Well, the reason I didn't think it would happen is because, once again, you're talking about a witness that wasn't there. And once again, if you call Trayvon's mother and brother, then you're going to call George's wife, father, uncle, mother, brother. I mean, when is it going to end? And so what you've basically done again is you're counseling out, you know, somebody else's testimony. So you're saying, you know, left, right, red, yellow. You're just, you know, it's a chess
right.
game. So it's going to come down to who do you believe. That's it.
And Trayvon's mother, I have to admit, and I've always felt this way about her, what a lovely woman, stoic, your heart, my heart. You can't, if your heart doesn't break for that woman, then you don't have a heart. She came across beautifully today, as did Trayvon's brother. Now, I felt the defense was a little bit rude and tacky, but Cheryl McCollum, I have to say, I thought about what you said, because although Trayvon Martin's mother came across beautifully, are we going to be talking about that? No, we're going to be talking about what the defense said to her and what the defense did to her. Again, a tactic that perhaps the defense is actually using. I don't know. We're talking about the George Zimmerman case. It is the hottest trial in the country right now. It has divided this country. I think I've apologized more for my behavior for any case ever, because I get so emotional and so upset, because I hate being called a racist, not looking at the evidence, because I am. I thought George was guilty as all hell and needed to be in prison for life. Seeing what the prosecution is presenting to me right now, doesn't even come close to that. Let's talk about what happened today. Cheryl, I just want you to give us your opinions and thoughts on the witnesses, and you have the floor, my dear.
The medical examiner was the biggest disaster I've ever seen on the witness stand.
Oh,
my
gosh. Talk to me about that. Talk to me.
Again, the translation of anything that he had to say, what sticks out in your mind is, I have no memory of this autopsy. I remember nothing, zero. I remember nothing, zero. Okay, so let's take just that for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
If you are telling me that you performed an autopsy in February, and by May, it is the case of the century, and it is causing all kind of just walkouts of schools and marches and national attention, that you don't remember it, A, I have a hard time believing it, but B, the problem is that means a 17-year-old black male with a gunshot wound is nothing new. It's not anything that stands out in your mind, which might go to George's theory that it's not a safe place to be.
Wow.
Just saying.
Do you think that's something that the defense might bring up in closing, or is that just something that you're...
I don't think they have to.
I think it's very clear.
If he was a 17-year-old Korean, would he remember that? I bet he would. If he was a 17-year-old Native American, bet he would. Sure he would. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I do follow it, but
the medical examiner saying, there was nothing exaggerated, nothing out of the ordinary, nothing so extraordinary that I would even recall this in any way without using notes. Now, let's talk about those for just a minute.
Okay.
If you ever take something to the witness stand with you that is not your original case file, they are notes like a cheat sheet. Hey, I want to remember to mention a grass in. I want to mention, you know, the gunshot wound. Those notes can be entered into evidence, which is what you saw happen today.
Is that what happened? That's I was wondering what that was about. Okay.
That was not even a rookie move. That is the most asinine thing I've ever heard from a medical examiner.
Tell us what happened. Give us the breakdown of what happened today with the medical examiner.
And all of a sudden, Mr. West says, what are you looking at? Because he keeps looking at something. And he says, my notes. Your notes from the case file? No. The notes that I wrote to anticipate the questions you were going to ask me about this case when I went back and did research about it.
Mm-hmm.
What?
And so anybody that's a court, that no understands the court system, to a layperson like me, I wouldn't think anything of it. But you're sitting there, and so is every attorney and pundit watching this, probably about ready to have a heart attack, because you know now those notes that medical examiner wrote down himself are now into evidence. What happens next?
Well, then, of course, there's a big fight, because in his notes, he said that the level of THC that Trayvon had in his system would affect the way he behaved. Well, then, of course, the prosecution goes nuts because we've already agreed that's not coming in. Yeah, and we didn't introduce it, says the defense. You opened the door with your witness who brought handwritten notes to the stand.
Oh, my gosh.
Anybody that's ever watched TV has never seen anybody take a cheat sheet to the stand.
Never.
If you were testifying in any trial, you wouldn't take notes to jog your memory. You should know what you're saying if it's the truth.
You don't need notes. Exactly.
And
exactly.
Again, this is not just the state's witness. This is the person that did the autopsy who says, I don't remember anything, nothing. Zero. Mm-hmm. He used the word zero. And then he interrupted constantly. He said, those are my notes, they're my notes. And the judge is like, yeah, I know that. We're going to make a copy and give it to him to read.
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
She didn't even say we need a sidebar. She didn't even need the argument from the other side. She didn't even want to hear from the prosecution. You brought him, you testified from it. That makes it evidence.
Wow. Oh, do you think what I would like to know is why. I guess maybe it's such an obvious thing that the prosecution wouldn't need to say to him, for God's sakes, don't bring any of your own written notes. Is it just kind of an understanding that that's what you do not do?
He's had training as a medical examiner. His whole gig is legally and scientifically get the evidence for court. That's his whole job. If
and
it wasn't
so,
for the forensic part, we don't need him. He's the medical examiner.
Mm-hmm.
That's his job. Is this murder, suicide, accidental, or natural? If you say it's murder or homicide, then here's what I need from you. Prove it and tell me what you saw. Is there stippling around the entrance wound? Where's the exit wound? At what angle is it? Let's do a toxicology. What's in his system? What is the time of death? Was there full rigor? When? Those are the questions I need. You're going to scrape his nails. He says, and this is the part where you just go, really, dude? I don't know how long Trayvon was out there. Okay, you've got a case file, don't you? And supposedly somebody would have reviewed that case file before they testified in the trial of the century.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a technician that says, I arrived here, and we know from the 911 call the shooting occurred here, which means Trayvon Martin laid out there for 3 hours.
Wow.
Do you think in 3 hours some evidence might have washed away in the rain?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There goes your DNA. There goes your DNA evidence right there. Anybody
remember,
can see that.
Their expert said, the state's expert, not the defense, the state's expert said, oh, yeah, water and humidity, very fragile. Fingerprints are gone. DNA's gone. Even touch DNA. Uh-huh. Because, again, we know George pulled the trigger. Nobody's arguing that. There's no evidence from DNA that he pulled the trigger.
But we know it because we know it because he's admitted it.
That's right.
The evidence,
right.
The physical evidence that proves that is gone.
Right. So here's the deal with Ms. Fulton. I have said from the very beginning on any show that I've been on, Lord knows yours, Grace, Under Tragedy, no question. She had the ability to basically call people to riot, and she did the opposite. She has been nothing but regal. But the bottom line is, she wasn't there.
Right.
And the bottom line is, all she can give us is opinion, not fact. And as difficult as that is for me to say, it's the truth. As a parent, everybody says, my child's the cutest, funniest, sweetest thing ever. That's an opinion, not a fact.
Right.
And it's certainly not something that can be proven. So again, when she says, that's Trayvon. If we were doing everything that is right and truthful, why not call Daddy? Daddy said it wasn't him.
Right,
so
exactly.
Right. See, they don't want you to hear that, which I get.
Right.
They don't want you to know about the marijuana, which I get. I'm just telling you it's not fair.
Right.
That means you're getting a partial picture.
Yes,
and
you're absolutely
brother,
right.
The brother says, yeah, I grew up with him. I've heard him yell and scream. Have you ever heard him scream for his life? No. Now, here's the other reality. If we're being truthful with each other, everybody that has more than one child has heard a scream. And most everybody has said, who was that? Because you don't even know your children.
Right.
If they scream really that high-pitched, I'm being, you know, in a bear trap, you don't know who it is. So it's difficult for me to believe that with the primal screams we're hearing, that either family knows for sure. But I think the defense is going to call somebody that was able to, you know, take that one part where it's more talking. You can hear the word help so clearly.
Yes.
And they're going to play it over and over. And maybe the jury can make their own mind. Does this sound like a 17-year-old or an almost 30-year-old?
Right. Charlotte, let's get back.
Students, you could ask them. Go ahead.
What did they say? Oh, no, I want to hear what your students had to say.
They think it's George Zimmerman.
I think it's George Zimmerman, too. But, you know, my opinion means nothing in this case. I need to go to the chat room. We have some discussion here about the medical examiner, the person we were just discussing. Now, apparently he said these notes that he had were the notes that he needed in English. Now, I'm sorry. Again, I'm going to be accused of being a racist, but here goes. I had trouble understanding him. I did. And he said he needed those notes for his English. Would that make a difference at all as far as admitting the notes? Okay. And why not?
No. The only thing he can use is his original file, the case file. And when you do an autopsy, there's a recording. So what you're doing is your hands are busy. So you're talking and giving your full report on audio. Then you translate that to something that the police can read, and then you fill out the autopsy report. But it's all there, but you cannot, like, you're doing a book report. You can't just give me a synopsis and only use that. I need the whole book. That's what we're testifying about. So you can't say, well, I needed, because, and what he said on the stand, keep in mind, he said, I wrote down answers to questions that I anticipated you asking me. That means you have knowledge of something that was not in the case file, but you already said you didn't remember anything. Well, that sounds not quite right.
Right, exactly.
And again, to make a mistake of that magnitude is inexcusable. And once again, who prepared these witnesses for trial?
That person needs to have a different job from now on, I think. I really do.
We're 2 weeks into this. They failed to put anybody up that could refute anything that George Zimmerman said. And again, I'm a lifetime prosecution side person. I've never worked for the defense or a civil person in my entire life. I am mm-hmm. a state person, government person. I cannot believe what was put on in this trial. And if anybody listening is a Trayvon Martin supporter, you should be just as upset, if not more.
Right.
Because they didn't fight for him like they should have.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
There's been no proof he followed him.
Right. And that's the big thing that I always went back to. That was my fallback. It was like, you've got a 17-year-old kid, African-American, and let's face it, they can be treated differently if they're in a neighborhood that nobody knows them. They'll be looked upon, as much as I hate to say it, and it's not right, but some people will look upon them as suspicious. So here you have Trayvon Martin innocently going to the store, walking home, and George Zimmerman follows them. I don't blame Trayvon. That was my argument.
Okay,
but they
let me
haven't...
stop you right there.
Okay.
Because let's, again, we need to tell the truth.
Yes.
When you say someone innocently was walking about the store, but you know at some point he used an illegal drug, I don't know that he innocently went to the store.
Well, that's
a good
point.
I know at some point he smoked enough marijuana, and this is the interesting thing to me. He smoked enough marijuana for the medical examiner to say, even though it wasn't in front of the jury, that it would have changed his behavior.
Mm-hmm.
That means he gets suspended from school. He is sent up near, you know, his dad. No. He either brought it with him or purchased it there. Either
mm-hmm.
way, that's one crime. He smoked it. That's another crime. So, again, innocently, we're assuming. But I think there's evidence that it wasn't so innocent. So when you say, why would somebody stand in the rain for 48 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Doing something illegal.
Well, see, and I
we
say he's talking
did.
To... Well, but I'm saying he could be talking to his girlfriend and he could have smoked the joint way before then. And that's where it gets all muddled and all confused. But when we come back to that one misconception that has been out there because the state did not prove it, and that is, I was certain that George Zimmerman got out and followed Trayvon. And I thought, if that was my kid and some, you know, 30-year-old guy was following him and giving him the eye, I wouldn't want him to beat him up, but I would certainly understand why he would be annoyed and upset. And but then here we go back to it. They didn't prove that. That's what I was told.
Nope.
That's what I was certain happened. But they didn't prove it. And that is, I'm boggling.
In any of the chat room, nobody in any of the emails, nobody on my page has given me any evidence. They just keep saying it. Well, you can say it, but that doesn't mean it's true, period.
Right.
So you're saying he followed him, but again, and I'm only assuming the defense is going to do this, they're going to take the 911 tape and they're going
mm-hmm.
to chop it up. Which way did he go? I don't know. Let me see. Are you following him? Yeah, because you want to know where he was going. We
mm-hmm.
don't need to do that. Oh, okay, I'll stop. And then, do you have an address? I've got to have a physical address. Okay, I'm going to go look for it. Again,
hey, I have a question.
On the phone. Uh-huh.
Let me stop you right here, and this is from the chat room. I think it's a good question. Why couldn't he drive around in his car and look for an address? Why did he have to get out and walk around?
Because from his car, he couldn't see the numbers. One of the state's witnesses even said in order to see her number, he would have to walk right up to her house.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I
that,
see. So if he was in the car,
state's witness.
If he was in the car, he wouldn't be able to see the numbers, so he had to walk toward the house. Okay,
correct.
That makes sense.
Now,
that's from
keep
the state
in mind,
witness.
He got out of the car originally to find out which way he went because he was asked. And then when he was told, don't do that, I still need a number, he had to walk back to get in the front of the houses, is what he has claimed. So, again, the witness that's the real estate agent that lived on the corner house, said,
mm-hmm.
in the dark, in the rain, you would never be able to see my numbers. Now, me, when I was out there, the street signs that do exist are very few. And then it's confusing because the streets are like semicircled in like a half moon. And mm-hmm. sometimes you don't know, am I on the same street or have I merged into another street? So, again, one of the people that was the real estate agent that was also on the homeowner, she didn't know the other person's address. So, mm-hmm. again, every single thing that George has said that people have made fun of, oh, you would know the street sign. No, you might not.
Mm-hmm.
George was renting. He didn't even own it. This woman owned her house and was part of the board and didn't know an address of where she was talking about she saw his truck.
Got it. Okay, we're going to go to my unofficial yet much adored sidekick co-host, Michael in Minnesota. I know, Michael, you are bursting for some questions, and you will probably be asking the questions that a lot of people are thinking. Michael, what do you want to ask Cheryl or talk about?
Well,
I should
first
say.
Of all, I got to start out by disagreeing with your assessment of Sabrina. Now, when she talked about having a communication major, I thought it was kind of telling. She reminded me a bit of Alice LaViolette in that she was claiming to not understand the questions put to her by O'Mara, Mara, and they were very clear questions. And
well,
so,
let me jump in, buddy, because I'm with you. If you remember,
I didn't. That just seemed disingenuous to me.
Okay. When I'm talking about when she was talking about just the screen part, but let me be real clear. When Dee Dee spoke, if you remember, and when she didn't want to answer something, she would say, I don't understand what you're asking me.
That's what that was. She just didn't want to, I don't think she wanted to say what he wanted her to say.
But there's a common
exactly.
thread here. Remember the female medical expert? She pulled the same thing. I don't understand what you're asking. So, again, whenever there's a common thread and all your witnesses start to do the same behavior, then there is this certain thing that you think to yourself, huh, has somebody told them to do that?
Right, mm-hmm. right. I found it suspect. So I wasn't as impressed with her testimony as I wanted to be.
But again,
and then let's move on to the medical examiner.
Okay, hold on. Don't move away too fast. Hold on. Again, it's not that I was impressed by anything. I said a week ago, what could she possibly add? Nothing. Everybody knew what she was going to claim. Everybody. Nobody went, oh, my God, I didn't know she thought that. But again, she wasn't there. So she,
right.
See, they had to be real careful. See, what I was hoping would happen today is when he said, you know, have you ever heard Trayvon scream for his life? She was going to say, well, yes or no. And he was going to be able to work in, you know, well, have you ever known him to be in a fight? Have you ever known him to get the better of somebody or something? And, of course, that never materialized. But, again, she brought nothing to the state but an opinion.
Right.
Nothing mm-hmm. factual.
That was then refuted by her other son, who gave the interview to the ABC News or whatever and said his initial was, there was no way for me to tell.
And the father said it wasn't him.
And the father said it. But we don't know that yet because that's not in evidence.
But we know it.
We know it. But
and it's coming.
Then the medical examiner, when he was talking about the body, I thought it was really suspect, too, that he had no recollection. But I found it very odd that the crime scene handlers, or the whoever collects the evidence at the scene, did not beg Trayvon's hands. So, as you said, by the time he laid out in those elements for those 3 hours, anything that would have been there would have washed away. Especially
sure.
if he had the motion of running them over the grass to bring them up under his body towards the wound. That also would have had a wiping action, I would assume. But anyway, so they flubbed there. And the major change in his testimony from originally saying Trayvon could have lived for 1 to 3 minutes, today changed to 1 to 10 minutes. That is
right.
huge. And
huge.
Yeah, so to the naysayers who said you don't live, you drop dead with a wound like that, Here we have the experts saying completely opposite that, absolutely not. He could have uttered in pain, and he could have had movement for, although
right.
limited. He kind of went back and forth on that. I was left not knowing what his final feeling was about movement and how much, and I don't think he spoke with any specificity to that either.
And, y'all,
but
that's
then,
what I was saying before. The state is giving you reasonable doubt with their own witnesses.
Yeah. Well, and then, so we get to the end of the defense, the prosecution, and then they did ask for this to be set aside for an acquittal because, like they said, George shouldn't have to spend one more minute in front of this jury given
right.
what we've heard. Of course, she denies that, and so we move along. And here I just looked at the chat room, and we have people saying Trayvon did not move his extremities after the shot. How does someone claim to know that? Oh, drives me crazy.
And listen, I'm not even worried about that. I'm worried about, did the state prove that?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is no.
I think what we need to do here, everybody, is we need to separate what we feel we know and what the state proved. I think there are
exactly.
two separate stories going on here. And for the sake of this discussion, we need to stick with what the state proved. Let me just tell what we're doing here in case you're just joining us. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio with Cheryl McCollum, professor and incredible human being. She works with the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. One of our callers, Michael in Minnesota, and you're welcome to call in as well. The number is area code 760-825-0933 if you have a question or a comment. And looks like we do have some comments here. I apologize in advance. I do not have a 7-second delay, but I don't want to let crank callers and obnoxious people stop me from taking phone calls. So I'm going to try one, and if it doesn't work, then I don't know if I'll try anymore. Okay, let's go to area code 661. Do you have a question for Cheryl McCollum?
Hi, basically the other day during the trial, when Zimmerman came out, there seemed to be a guy holding his arm. He looked like Shrek, and he was shitting on his anus.
Looked like what?
He looked like Shrek.
Whoops, sorry, I lost him.
He looked like Shrek, and he was shitting on inside his anus.
Does anybody understand what this person is saying?
No.
Okay,
no.
Thank you very much. I have no idea what that person was saying. Something about holding his arms and he looked like Shrek? No clue.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get back to what we were talking about. So, Cheryl.
Can I just give you a 2-second thing that I teach my students?
Yes.
What you believe is not what you know. And what you know is not what you can prove. So I may believe George committed this crime. I don't know whether or not it was manslaughter or second degree. Right
mm-hmm.
now, the state has not proved either one. Does that
You're
make
absolutely
sense?
Right. That makes perfect
so
sense.
So when you say to me, well, George is a liar, where is that? Just tell me a fact. So if we just say Trayvon's a drug user, fact.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. George Zimmerman shot him, fact. Those are things we know. Those are undisputed. Those are proven. But if
right.
we just keep saying, oh, well, his brother knows for sure, that's not true. Everybody.
No. And we know
Everybody.
He was injured. We know George was injured. That is proven.
And we know Trayvon was not, other than the gunshot wound and a scrape. So he didn't have a busted lip. He didn't have a busted nose. He didn't have bruising on his head or swelling on his head. So, again,
mm-hmm.
when you have a witness come out of their house, Trayvon doesn't run away. Trayvon doesn't stop hitting him. Trayvon doesn't ask for help. When he's on the phone with Dee Dee, he doesn't call 911 or his father. At what point did Trayvon ask anyone for help? It
right.
didn't happen.
We have a question in the chat room, Cheryl, and I think this is important as well. Why is it important how long Trayvon was alive after he was shot? What bearing does that have on this case?
It's trying to discredit and impeach George.
Right.
George,
he claimed
he said
that
something. George said he moved.
And
well,
George said he
possible,
said something.
Right.
Yeah.
George said he said, "You got me," and put his hands
mm-hmm.
up.
Right.
And then moved away from him.
Now,
but again, when you and I talked months ago, Tricia, it said in the autopsy he lived for long enough to at least say one day.
Mm-hmm. Now, have we determined if George Zimmerman had injuries from an undetermined source? Has that been proven in court yet?
What?
No.
You mean
any injury? I'm going from the chat room here. Somebody is stating that George Zimmerman has injuries from some undetermined source. Has that been proven?
No.
Cheryl?
No.
Okay.
No. The state has entered, and this is really important for people to understand, they've put no one up that has disputed anything that George has claimed. There's
mm-hmm.
no evidence that any of his injuries are self-inflicted. None. There's no evidence that he fell and hit his own head. There is no evidence that the witness ran out of the house and accidentally kicked him. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Zero.
So one thing that people have to remember is George Zimmerman stated that he got these injuries from Trayvon Martin. It's up to the prosecution to prove he did not. As the case stands today, the prosecution has not disproven what George has said, and that's where we're at, and we need to keep our focus. We need to put our blinders on, and not justice blinders, but blinders on to all this other stuff around us and focus on what was in the courtroom. You know how a racehorse has blinders so they don't get distracted? We need those on the sides of our brains here so we don't get distracted. So,
and
George
that's
Zimmerman,
what I've had
Patricia.
From the beginning of this case. I came in not knowing a thing, and
mm-hmm.
all of the information I've gleaned has been from the courtroom, and I have not heard anything to dispute George's testimony.
Patricia,
and it's only through Cheryl's additions that about the I would never have even known he took and passed a polygraph if it weren't for our beloved Cheryl, because
Cheryl,
that's not something that I've ever heard mentioned in the trial.
Right. Cheryl, what were you going to say? Hold on, Michael. Cheryl needs to jump in here. Go ahead.
The people that are so angry about it are forgetting that George's parents have been kept out of the courtroom, but Trayvon's parents are allowed.
Mm-hmm.
George's school is coming in, but Trayvon isn't. You know, all of this negativity surrounding one side is being allowed, but we're doing everything possible to keep out Trayvon's drug use, his school records, his behavior, his, you know, being found with stolen merchandise on him and empty baggies. All of that's being left out. We have gone out of our way to almost make this slanted toward the prosecution. Miss
mm-hmm.
Fulton has been in the room with all the major witnesses during their depositions, and she's heard every single witness. No other families had that benefit.
Yeah, I heard the pundits on CNN complaining about that, too.
It's not fair. And
mm-hmm.
so to me, if we were to flip this and we were to say, hey, the, you know, black suspect, your family has to stay out, but the white victim's family can stay. We're going to let all the stuff in about your education and your past behavior, but we're not going to talk about the victim at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's when people should lose their mind. Not now. Because, again, it's not equal playing field. It's not. And to me, we've done everything to protect his past that we all admit or that has been admitted by people we know is true. It's not even a suspect. It's not even a theory. It's not a rumor. We know it.
We do have a question.
We know it.
We have a question, and this is a good one. Why isn't he responsible for being reckless in any way? Is that not part of this case, that he is somehow, some way reckless? I guess that would be the manslaughter.
Question.
That is a great question.
Right, but my issue is that's not what he was charged with.
Okay.
If he was charged with reckless endangerment, I'd be all about hearing that out. But
mm-hmm.
he was charged with second-degree murder. It doesn't fit at all.
But the jury, they can come back with manslaughter.
He doesn't have to. He thought his life was in imminent danger from this beating. He couldn't get out from under Trayvon Martin. And he thought his only remedy was to shoot to
yes.
save
Trisha?
His own life. And so therefore,
hold on, hold on, Michael. I got
reckless.
I gotta let Cheryl jump in here. Cheryl, go ahead.
No, Michael's absolutely right. But above that, at what point was George reckless? He legally drove a car. He legally parked it. He legally got out of it. He legally walked down the sidewalk. He legally carried a weapon. At what point was he reckless? If I am in my neighborhood and see someone standing in a neighbor's driveway who I know does not live there, I legally call the non-emergency number to say, hey, there's a suspicious guy out here.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point exactly was he reckless? He can carry that gun. He's got a license.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a permit. He can get out of his car. And if I hear one more time he didn't obey 911, I am going to flip out. 911 cannot tell me what to do.
Right.
And he was under no obligation to even call them and did and stayed on the phone 4.5 hours. So
mm-hmm.
where is the reckless behavior? Taking a flashlight and looking for an address because you're asked for one 5 times?
Again, we are going by what is presented in court. We have to take our sifter and separate what we think we know, our opinion, what we believe to be the truth, and boom, take it right into the courtroom and exactly what has been presented, because that is what the jury is going to base their decision on, and that's what we need to base our decision on. And Cheryl and Michael, I agree with you both that the prosecution, we've bent over backwards. The state, everybody has bent over backwards for the prosecution to make sure that Trayvon's voice is heard. And this is the best they can come up with. It's very, very frustrating. Hold on, I'm going to go to a caller. I think this is a normal person. Area code 208, are you there?
I'm here, Tricia, and I'm not going to make anybody flip out.
Thank you. Good.
It's
thank
Peggy.
You. This is Dream. This is Peggy, and she's a sweetheart, and she's not going to say anything awful or horrible. And she's going to offer up some delicious words herself. So, Peggy, the floor is yours.
Well, I love all of you guys. I just have to tell you, I listen consistently all the time, and I just love the conversation that's had here, so I appreciate that. I don't spend a lot of time in the chat room because it's too distracting, but in any case, I don't understand, because Trayvon wasn't doing anything illegal that was brought. I mean, he could stand mm-hmm. out in the rain and talk on the phone and basically stand anywhere you want. So that's
right.
why I had the question about being, you know, who was reckless here? And that's what I don't understand, Cheryl. I get it that there are so many emotional trigger issues here that if we could just lose all of that and look at it black and white, but nobody seems to be able to do that.
Right. Well, I'll try to answer some of that the best that I can. I have said on Trisha's show over and over and over, it was a perfect storm, that you've got two people that are working and walking and talking on the phone. They're all within their legal right. But at
mm-hmm.
some point, something happened just horrible.
Right?
But
yeah.
here's the reality. And when you've got somebody not walking, and see, that's where people, again, are not telling the truth based on what we even know. If you leave 7-Eleven at 6:30 from that door to Trayvon Martin's father's door is 15 minutes walking, which would have put him inside that house at 6:45. It's raining, so you might even assume somebody was Jaws. Now, he might have stopped and gotten shelter if the rain got heavier, but at some point, he is standing in a driveway, and that driveway is Frank Tappy, whose house had been burglarized, that George knows he doesn't live at,
mm-hmm.
because he knows Frank Tappy.
Right.
That is suspicious. It may not be illegal, but loitering is.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be. But then he goes up to the mailboxes and he stops again. Well, obviously, it's raining. But
yeah.
Why wouldn't he run? He's already got a hoodie on, and I will never accept he didn't know how he looked.
Yeah. Well,
he,
I can say I have a
dragon. He's 6 foot tall. He's got a hoodie on that shields his identity, and he's just in this area that he knows he's not going to be recognized by anybody because he doesn't live there. So, again, if he sees somebody paying attention to him, he ought to wave maybe. Maybe instead of putting all the blame on George, why didn't you just tell him, hey, I'm neighborhood watch? Why didn't Trayvon say, hey, everything's good? Or when he took off running, why didn't he go home? So we can put the blame wherever we want. Why did
right.
George get out of the truck? I don't know. Why did he even
yeah.
call 911? Why did he give a crap when he saw somebody standing in the rain? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because of
why
the
Trayvon
crime
get straight
in the neighborhood.
Home? I know. But that particular moment, you know, are you just going to, you know, I'm just saying, he called every single time. I mean, after a while, don't you even get tired of being wrong? You know? So, I mean, to me, if you call four times and you're only right once, that might be okay. But if you call, you know, two dozen times and you're never right,
mm-hmm.
or they, quote, always get away, it seems like after a while you'd be like, screw it. Have a good night, whoever you are. It ain't my house. So I'm just
well, that's
saying,
what
I
worry. That's what I worry
oh, I,
that
I'm
he did.
You,
that he just got...
Okay, one at a time.
There's going to be a lot of negative repercussions to this either way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. People are going to blow out calling. Go ahead.
Greenpatcher, you go
just,
ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, Cheryl, you were there. So when you were standing there, did you know a lot of the facts that were coming? And so as you stood there and walked through that place, could you see how George's story fell together?
Yes.
Okay, so that's why I tend to lean your direction, because you're our eyes and ears, and so I totally respect your opinion. So I'm really glad that you're here and on the show, because I think that you have many of us respect your opinion. I mean,
yes,
I don't
absolutely.
Know anybody that doesn't.
And I want everybody to know my heart breaks for her. When I first walked that neighborhood, I talked to Trisha that very night.
Yeah, I
and
remember.
And I told her, as a mother of a son, I wish I'd never walked it.
Right.
Because all I could think of, he could have been home literally 9 different ways in that
mm-hmm.
amount of time. And it's just,
yeah.
it is gut-wrenching to think, you know, honey, he was right there. The back door was less than a football field. Trayvon could sprint a football field and did in practice all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, the whole thing bothers you. And that's why when people start hollering about, you know, Trisha getting mad or anybody being a racist, it's so off base, because that's not even what we're talking about. You can take race completely out of it, and I probably wouldn't change anything I've said.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
You take a white kid in a hoodie standing in a driveway where he don't live, he doesn't look right.
Right.
So what are we supposed to do, ignore it and say
mm-hmm.
whoever wants to come stand in my driveway can? That's ridiculous. Nobody's
going
to believe.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Dreamcatcher,
go ahead.
Well, I think that's where they're going to have the problem with an all-woman jury. Because as a mother, I can see my son doing exactly that. I had a teenage son. He's, thank God, 39 years old now. But, I mean, I can see him standing in the rain, not caring whether it poured, whether he was dripping wet, if he was talking
right.
to his girlfriend or whatever. and being totally oblivious to the whole world.
Right. Me too.
I can see that
happening.
What bothers me, I think. I don't want my electronics to get wet. I panic if I'm out for a jog and my iPad it starts to sprinkle.
But not
because
Michael,
you're not
the kids.
You're not a goofy teenager that has no clue about anything.
You paid for it.
Right. You worked hard and paid for it. Big difference to goofy teenagers not thinking. They don't think. Their brains are not formed emotionally yet, and they do stupid things. And that's what's so painful about
this. Can I just add one thing to what Dreamcatcher's saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Everybody on that jury, even if they're a mother, there's one mother, and I believe she's in her 60s. If she saw someone standing in her driveway in a hoodie, she would be afraid, and she knows it.
Right.
Take race out of it. Somebody in a hoodie, in the dark, in the rain, in my driveway, scares me.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to burglarize. He's going to rape. He's going to rob. I mean, why is he here?
Well, and here's the other thing that I thought of, Cheryl, is that when that woman was on the 911 call, the one that heard the one gunshot, she was like, I'm not stepping out there to see what's going on because she was scared.
Right. And keep in mind, neither did George. He called the police.
Right.
And he stayed on the phone for 2 minutes and some change before he ever got out of the car. So when George first saw him, he didn't roll down the window and say anything. He didn't get out of the car and approach him. So that goes to what I'm telling you. He didn't feel at ease about this guy either.
Right.
And think about what George said. He looks like he's up to no good. He looks like he's on drugs. We've had a lot of burglaries. All of that's true.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out to be true. You can get mad at that, but he had THC in his system. Okay, get mad. It's a fact. So if we accept it and move from there, just like I would tell a woman who's 20 years old, hey, don't go, or 21, don't go to a bar alone, drink, and then walk home. You have every legal right to do it. But it's not a good idea regarding your safety. So we can argue the point, well, she has every right to go to a bar and have a few drinks and walk home not to get a DUI. Yep, she does. But something happening to her bad goes way up. So to me, you take that same child and you say, hey, if it's dark and raining and you've got on a hoodie, you might look a certain way. But the deal is, they already know that. Which is the reason they dress that way.
Mm-hmm.
Not black children, any children. Whether it's somebody that's Hispanic or white or black, they know they're covering half of their face. They know what they're doing. That's why they bought the clothes. Nobody buys pants three sizes, two sizes. I mean, they want to sag their pants. They want to wear the hoodie. Then, okay, don't get mad when somebody, you know, says, he may look like he's up to no good. And we talked about it again, getting mad at corporate America because banks and certain stores say you can't even come in here if you're wearing a hoodie.
Right.
Right.
That's true. We do have another caller calling in. Let's see. Where did they go? I believe it's area code 206, and I think this is another normal person. Hi, area code 206. You're on the air with Cheryl, Michael, Dreamcatcher, Catcher, and me, Tricia. Who's this?
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I couldn't hold my tongue any longer because I was hearing all this talk about, unjustifiably profiling someone for the way they're dressed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I just wanted to make a comment.
Sure.
A couple of days ago, my youngest daughter, who's 24, and I were sitting on our front porch, and there was a man that was pacing back and forth with his cell phone in his hand, and he was talking on his cell phone, and it was near dusk, and he was pacing back and forth, and as my daughter and I were chatting with each other, my daughter, who's 24 years old, and who I also want to add has multiple facial piercings and who is not by anybody's definition appearing to be someone who has a mainstream appearance. I guess you would consider her to be a goth.
Okay.
And before I even noticed the guy out there pacing, you know, out on the street with his cell phone, my daughter pointed out to me, she goes, what's that guy doing? What is he doing?
Exactly. That's, he could be totally innocent.
So I just
want to point
that out. People can say what they want about appearances and what we might think, but I think that gets a lot into the area of personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And in my own 24-year-old daughter, who has been profiled, if you want to put it that way, when she's been shopping
sure she
in the
has.
Mall.
Sure.
Because people think
Absolutely.
She's going to shoplift, and she's the most honest person ever.
Right.
And she was the first person to point out that guy to me pacing back and forth on the street. What is he
you
doing
know
what? Here?
Because it was something that was unusual in
exactly.
your neighborhood, and you
yeah.
didn't recognize the person. That's all this. That's all people are trying to say here, I feel, is that this was a situation where nobody recognized him. It was a perfect storm of ridiculous things that happened, and that's why a young 17-year-old is dead. It's not right. It is horrible that
no,
it happened.
No, it's not right.
It's absolutely not right.
Any more than it would be right if my daughter had been killed, fatally shot,
sure.
you know, in certain circumstances. No, it's not right. But on the other hand, it's also not right for people to claim that nobody has the right to have a suspicion of someone if they see someone that they don't recognize in their neighborhood for whatever reason.
As a woman walking alone, I'm suspicious of everybody I don't know.
I am too.
On a street, and I don't care. It's like I'm looking every which way to make sure I'm safe. That doesn't mean I'm saying people are horrible and
yeah.
rotten and this and that and this.
And here's the other thing, Tricia, if I can interject this.
Please.
Last year, last summer, our next-door neighbors were victims of a home invasion.
Ooh.
So everybody in the neighborhood has been on the alert to look out for people
mm-hmm.
in our neighborhood that we don't know who they are. And I think my daughter picked up on that, and she was going right away, well, who is this guy? What is he doing? Is he waiting for a ride? Why is he pacing up and down the street? And you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I exactly.
I do think
exactly.
the heightened alert had a lot to do with this.
Yes.
Numerous break-ins in the neighborhood. I mean, that makes you very suspicious. And anybody who isn't, I would think that there's something wrong with them. If there's been so many break-ins in the neighborhood, it's being good neighbors to keep your eye on your fellow
yes,
neighbors.
Yes, it is. I agree, Michael. It's totally a good neighbor. If everybody would do that, there'd be a lot less crime.
I think so.
Right.
Exactly. And as a woman especially, you have to be careful if you're walking alone. That's all there is to it. Or if you're alone in your house. I had somebody
I think
pull
men,
up here.
It goes with men, too.
Well,
I
men
often
too.
Don't go
exactly.
to the grocery store until 11 at night, and mm-hmm. I always park far away because I don't want to get my doors dinged. But I really get uneasy if I'm walking and I see something suspicious. And
well, sure.
That's just me, so...
Yes, Cheryl McCollum, pop
is
in here,
is the caller
please.
Still there?
Yes, she is.
Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, go ahead.
With the piercings that your daughter has on her face and the goth kind of look, did she know beforehand the reaction she may get from people?
She got these piercings as a teenager when she was 18, 19 years old.
Sure.
And I don't think she expected the reaction that she got, but I will say this. Afterwards, in the ensuing years, because it's been a number of years, she has talked to me about how she doesn't like how people respond to her, so she has to make an extra effort to appear to be an honest, trustworthy person in order to get ahead of preconceived notions that people might form about her.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, though, most people that are goth, they know exactly the reaction they're fixing to get.
Right. That's
right.
Which is something they enjoy.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, Trayvon Martin knew exactly how he looked. And he dressed that way
yes.
on purpose.
So I
my
understand.
Only point, when people say you're unjustly profiled, you gave me the profile.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
Trayvon gave me the profile. Do you understand what I'm saying? So
but
when George says, here's a guy covering his identity in the dark, in the rain, standing in front of a house he doesn't live in. That's not unjustly profiling. That, please call the police on me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
But,
Cheryl, and we're using this word profile like it's illegal and it's the worst thing in the world because we're being conditioned to do that. People profile all the time.
Dreamcatcher, you have a question.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, Cheryl, I don't think that a 17-year-old kid thinks about the consequences of getting killed over it. I don't think they even, they just don't even think that far ahead. You know, it's self-expression to them, but I don't think they necessarily think, well, somebody's going to think that I'm a thug, and so they're going to kill me. You know, they think they're invincible.
Exactly.
That's
and that's why he turned around and approached George Zimmerman. He was the one who took an aggressive stand. Hey, why are you following me? Or whatever the words were. Or you got a problem or something to that effect.
But see, I don't blame him for doing that. I don't. Because he didn't know who George Zimmerman was. He didn't know who George Zimmerman was. So I understand that. That, like Cheryl said, it's a perfect storm of just bad decisions. Bad decisions.
But Tricia, we gotta finish this conversation that we're having. He had gang tattoos. He
no, they weren't visible.
Why didn't his mom talk about those?
Well, now wait, hold on, guys. They were not visible to George, though, were they?
No, I understand that. I'm talking about the whole persona.
Okay.
So when you say somebody was so off base about him, how?
Mm-hmm.
So again, you have tattoos, more than one, underage. He wasn't even of legal age to get them.
Okay? But now,
so
if he's
carrying this persona to the point that, again, that factored in to what occurred.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't wearing an ROTC uniform. Okay?
Right.
So my point, again, you keep saying things like unjustly profile. George, it seems like, was dead on the money.
Mm-hmm.
He did use drugs. He had burglarized. He had committed violence in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to accept that because that's part of how we educate. If
right.
you want to be goth and have facial piercings, don't be shocked if you don't get hired at the preschool. There's going to be a consequence. If
God,
you're going
I love
to
you.
Dress, but if you're
Cheryl,
going
I
to comple- dress,
I completely agree with you. Cheryl, I love you. I absolutely agree with you. And my daughter, who has her facial piercings, is having a hell of a time finding employment.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but that's
you
what
know,
I'm saying.
It affects, how people perceive you, no doubt about it.
Right. Just like tattoos that are visible on the neck and face. Absolutely.
But we don't need to act like you can walk around and look like however you want and stand wherever you want and do whatever you want. You can't.
Right.
And if you do, there's going to be a consequence. Even Trayvon's own mother came to Atlanta and said, please tell your bullies to take the hoodies off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
And
even Trayvon's mother said that.
At a predominantly black college. And I tell them, if you get stopped by the police 5 times in a week, you're doing something. So stop doing it just for your own. You know, I can drive and relax a little bit and not worry about showing my license and registration every 5 minutes.
Right.
You're doing something, and it's not that it's not okay that you're doing it. I'm talking about the real world.
There's a difference between the real world and politically correct. I know what you're saying.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yes, and my thing is for the protection of anybody 17 years old, whether it's your daughter or, you know, another upcoming senior in high school, I love self-expression. And again, most people don't know anything about me. I'm usually extremely private, but I've got a large family. And we've got people with blue hair and orange mohawks and everything. Baby, do your thing. I dig it. I love everything about it. I don't care who you sleep with. I don't care what you do on the dance floor. I don't care what you do in your bedroom. I'm happy. I'm proud of you. But when you walk out of my house, people are going to look at you not like you're a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout.
Correct.
If you're willing to accept that and you are cool with that, that's fine. But the reality is, the more spotlight you have placed on you that is negative, the more negativity you're going to get.
And right. That's reality. That's what we're talking about, is reality, not what should be, not about being in a free country, but that is the reality of it. Dreamcatcher, you're welcome to stay on. Would you like to stay on and listen, or would you like to stay on and participate? I want to make you happy, my dear. What would you like to do?
Well, I'd love to stay on and participate. I have one more question for Cheryl,
yes.
If she can answer it. I'm not sure.
Please do. We've got lots of time.
So if the jury hangs on this, suppose these women can't decide what to do about this case, because I see that happening just as quickly as anything else. If it's a mistrial or whatever, then what?
Well, it won't be a mistrial because everybody's played by the rules, but it will be a hung jury. And I agree with you. I think Tricia and I talked about this, and I used the analogy that I don't think six women could agree on how to make macaroni and cheese. So I don't think they're going to be able to agree on a sentence here. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong. It's just a gut feeling.
What would happen? What would happen?
Well,
then
the
state would the
probably
state do it again?
To retry him. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then they would, you know, get their stuff together. By the time they did this again, and probably at that point what might happen is a plea bargain so that people don't get put through this all over again. But as of right now, and again, I have been very clear not to give an opinion of who I think did anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I am simply analyzing, and I just want people to understand that when I say the state hadn't proved it, I mean that. And,
mm-hmm.
and I've probably talked to 50 experts across this country, they're like, yeah, I've never seen anything more disastrous. So you cannot find me an attorney that tells me, hey, I think they're doing a great job, because they're
mm-hmm,
not.
Right.
Normally what happens is a witness comes up and says, well, I use this such and such, and I know for a fact it's Trayvon Martin. And it's like, ooh, score. And then the defense
mm-hmm.
puts somebody up and says, no, actually, this is the most up-to-date scientific method, and it's absolutely George Zimmerman. And the fight goes.
Exactly.
On this particular trial, the reasonable doubt has been introduced by the state,
mm-hmm.
by their own witnesses. I've never seen anything like it, ever. This will be the playbook for every law school across the country of how not to prosecute someone.
Michael, my friend, I know you are bursting at the seams. Give us your thoughts.
I don't know. I made the mistake of looking at the chat room again. It just is so disheartening.
Don't, you know what? That's everybody's opinion. That's everybody's opinion, and they're allowed to have it. I want to know your personal thoughts from what you saw today in the courtroom.
Well, once again, I didn't get anything out of Sabrina, truthfully. I understand she thinks that's her son or she wants to say that. That makes sense to me. I thought her evasiveness to the defense's follow-up questions was a bit disconcerting, and I didn't appreciate that. She obviously understands communication, and the question was clear enough. I there was no reason for her to not answer it, but she obviously was refusing to do so. The
mm-hmm.
ME, I think I've pretty much, we've covered. I thought he was a disaster in the sense that he had no memory. He essentially tried to introduce evidence use evidence that wasn't admitted. Why the judge chose to get so angry with the defense over that when it was the prosecution's witness, I don't know. I was glad that she remedied that. Did you hear when they said, well, we'll make copies of it? And he said, no, you won't. They're mine. I mean,
oh,
I thought
yeah.
that was weird. That
yeah,
was really
that
weird.
Was shocking.
But
yeah,
the
and then...
The thing that shocked me about it is he clearly doesn't understand the protocol.
Yeah, really.
Which was
and
the
then,
most shocking
so
thing
we
about
start
an medical
exam. We start the defense, and we hear from the mother. And I thought she was as credible, if not more so, than Sabrina. She believes that scream is her son, George Zimmerman. And then I was really moved by the uncle and his testimony. And
yeah.
he seemed so real and so credible and so honest. And so that was my take on him. And I was watching that on a YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy watching the trial on YouTube. And the first comment I read was he was obviously committing perjury for his nephew. And I thought, isn't that interesting? We both just watched the same testimony.
Same thing.
I came across thinking how credible and honest and sincere he seemed, and someone else saw it completely different. It's so hard for me to understand how that happens.
It happens all the time, nonstop. Cheryl and Michael, hold on. We do have a caller here, and this is area code 306. Area code 307, you're on the air with Cheryl McCollum and Michael in Minnesota. What is your question or comment?
Okay, I have a comment about, okay, this is going on in Florida. I'm originally from Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
but I'm living in Wyoming. And people in the northern part of this country, it's totally different down south.
Mm-hmm. In what way?
My husband is retired military, so being in the military, I got over the, not racism, but prejudices.
Right.
Because of the military, you have to.
Right.
But, like my family down south, they're just so prejudiced.
Mm-hmm. So and the racism is still very strong, is what you're saying.
Yes, much, very
doesn't
much.
Surprise me. And that is so disgusting, and well, we've seen it, you know, on this show with the crank callers. And I see what you're saying, that in the South, and you don't want to paint everybody with the same brush, but what you're if I could just put words in your mouth, please, because that's my job. You're basically saying that what we see in Utah or Minnesota or New York or California is different than what we see in Florida and Alabama and Mississippi. Is that what the point that you're trying to get? Okay.
Yes.
And I wanted
to ask Cheryl, the second Trayvon's brother that testified today.
Yes.
To me, he was a very polite young man.
Absolutely.
And I read online, you know, people putting him down and everything, saying how that he wasn't intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my opinion of him was he went over so believable and well.
Yeah, no question. Here's what I saw. I saw a young man that was nervous. He's got a lot of pressure on him from his mom, not verbally or directly, but just he knows how important today was.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last thing he can do for his brother. He wanted to do a good job. That's all I saw.
Have any of you read up on their stepmother, Alicia?
No.
Because I've been reading about her, and she gave an interview, and she was very disappointed that the family didn't include her in any of this because
mm-hmm.
she more or less raised Trayvon.
Mm-hmm.
As you know,
really?
What she said in the interview. I don't. Ooh. Let me see.
I haven't heard anything. I would love to read. I would like to find that.
Okay.
Well, Trisha and I pointed out a while back it was obviously a void. Like, in other words, where is she?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Why
okay,
isn't she
let
here?
Me see.
Right.
Right.
Well, Sabrina sure made it sound like Trayvon and the son lived with their mom.
Uh-huh.
And they visited their father on weekends. Even
there is the Alicia Stanley story. It's the only real mom Trayvon ever knew. Oh, what's the name of the? And it's the conservativetreehouse.com.
Okay. Well, that would be interesting to read that.
Don't know anything about it.
Because I would like to find out as much as I possibly can about this case and the players in this case. Caller, we just want to stress again, we're not saying everybody in the South is racist, but we have to be honest in saying that it's different in the South than it is in the North and in the West, and you know, it's
very
just
much so.
Different. And not,
I would
not
like
everybody.
To believe that Minnesota has somehow risen above it, but I know it's alive and well here.
Sure,
I'm
it is everywhere.
Aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
My husband's grandmother lived on a reservation working, and her prejudice with that she went through at that time was against Indian nations.
Right.
Well,
yeah, everybody has something.
Down south, it's more the black.
Right,
and so
exactly.
It is everywhere, just different ways.
Absolutely right. Well, thank you for calling. I appreciate your comments, my dear, and you take care.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
You bet. You take care. Take
you
care now.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so where do we stand now? What happens on Monday, Cheryl? We have the defense. Do we know what's up next? Now, the defense lawyer gave a little press conference today. It was just a little mini thing. Basically, didn't he say it's just going to take a couple of days? I have a feeling this is going to go to the jury next week very easily, right?
I believe it will, too. Mm-hmm.
Do we know who they're calling on Monday?
I do not. I think that they have set it up very well that they wanted to, you know, cancel out Ms. Fulton quickly
mm-hmm.
and get that over with. They did that. Again, depends on who you believe now because you've been shown left and right. So it's just out there. So I think what they're going to do is they're going to systematically start whittling away at some of the circumstantial evidence that the state has put up. And
mm-hmm.
I think they're going to start with the timeline. And they're going to show that it was this amount of time when he ran into the cut at the tee and that he should
mm-hmm.
have been home before George even got there. And then they're going to show then what happened during the remaining time and why was he out of breath, like Didi said. They're just going to start knocking down even the circumstantial part. Because, again, they gave us nothing physical. They gave us nothing you know, hard and direct. So all we have is circumstantial. So they're going to knock that down, and then they're going to give us a little direct.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to George's own words. Watch his video.
Any chance they'll call George? I don't think there is.
No, ma'am.
No way. Okay,
no way.
How about this?
Quite frankly, it's not needed.
Well, no, it isn't. How important is the closing argument for the defense? Because isn't that where they're really going to show how all of the witnesses for the prosecution, almost all of them, they were able to turn and use them as their witnesses? Is that where it's all
yes.
going to come together?
The closing argument is their money, and it
mm-hmm.
should be done by Mr. O'Mara. And it's
going to
take – because he didn't piss anybody off day one.
That's true. He made everybody
okay.
mad.
Right. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it was the evil genius. I do.
Yes.
And you know, you'll watch it, but Mr. O'Mara is so articulate, and he can
mm-hmm.
spin a beautiful phrase. And I think that the jury is going to connect with him a little more,
mm-hmm.
More than Mr. West. But, you know, the closing argument, Sherry Jefferson, I'm going to quote her, but Sherry said, your opening argument is when you're standing at a bar or something and you see that person across the room that you just got to go talk to them. You know, it's now or never. I've got to get your attention, and I got to bring you into me somehow. That's your opening
mm-hmm.
argument. Your closing argument is completely different, Tricia. The closing
mm-hmm.
argument is you're on your deathbed, and you've got 2 minutes to tell the person you love what all they've meant to you. So the closing argument is the most important of the arguments.
Right. And so that is the one that will bring it all together, and that is the one that
right.
we're going to be watching very closely. Michael in Minnesota, your final thoughts, my dear. Don't get discouraged. We're all going to sing Kumbaya at the end of this and hold hands, I promise.
Well, no, I don't think we will, Trish. I think no matter if George is acquitted, I'm afraid of what the aftermath will be. The African Americans will not feel like they have found justice. I started out this whole case with you on this radio show saying, I really wish that someday we could be a nation that can see beyond race.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe it's going to happen in my lifetime. I'm ashamed to say it hasn't happened yet in America. I think we have the potential for greatness, and I hate that it's still alive and well and kicking.
Well,
racism.
No, but Cheryl, but Cheryl,
I gotta have
add
the final
something.
Say.
And I know what you're going to say, Cheryl, and I want you to say this. This is good.
I am. I am the only Southerner on this show, and I've just heard all of you talk about the South in a way that I don't see it. I live in a city the biggest city in the South, and I've got an African-American mayor and district attorney and chief of police and sheriff. We gave the world Dr. Martin Luther King. I work at a predominantly black college, and they love and care about me, and I love and care about them. I don't see it the way you see it. I'm not exposed to it the way you're telling me the South is supposed to be. I know for a fact that the largest race riots happened in Watts in California, not in the South.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe. I think that, again, you're projecting something based on TV that's not necessarily reality. Because it's always been told to me that if somebody in Hollywood wants somebody to be ignorant, they make them Southern. And if you want somebody really stupid, you make them a Southern police officer. Well, that's the projection.
Right.
It is not reality. I have worked with some tremendous people, and you know them. And these people, it's not about color, because if it were, we wouldn't work where we work in Zone 3.
Right.
But what about Reverend
Jackson? Wait a minute. I honestly believe, Michael, you're wrong. I think when all is said and done, we're going to learn a lot. And we're going to learn about how this case should have been approached and prosecuted, not how it was sent in the media before anybody, the good reverends included, had their facts.
Mm-hmm.
Because
okay.
they said a lot of things that we now know are flat not true.
I know.
But
and don't they have a responsibility to wait
yes.
and present facts rather than getting everybody
that.
All in this race uproar?
Not only that, I think they have the responsibility to come out and say, okay, we might have rushed to judgment.
Yeah.
And we've got to hold up Ms. Fulton, because I'm going to tell you something right now. She will be re-injured if he is acquitted or there's a hung jury. And she never should have been put through this. If they didn't have probable cause, that should have been explained to her. If they didn't have enough to arrest him then, but might have in 74 days, but they didn't, and they did that to her. The prosecution did that to her. The defense asked for no more time. They said no. So, again, the truth should have come out, not a picture of a 12-year-old, but his actual photograph. And we should have been able, in the beginning, to get things that were true. He didn't have a 16-year-old girlfriend that went to the hospital. That wasn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And they should have vetted her and got proof before they held a press conference. So all these walkouts that occurred and all this marching that occurred, if they hear the actual facts that the state presented, they might have gone, huh, maybe I shouldn't have been so angry. Maybe I should have waited. So all of us have a responsibility to slow down. And I'm going to again say, Tricia, you have no reason to apologize to anybody. I said it the other night. You're the only one putting your name out there, putting the phone number out there, and trying to calm everybody down with the truth.
That's what I'm trying to do.
You've got nothing to apologize for. And it's not okay that somebody else gets to hide and just spew this vile, foul opinion that is not based on fact. It's something you're saying. And I don't give it any credence and stop reading it. They have
there
no power and they have no say. The most important thing is what you're doing. We're going to love and care about Ms. Fulton. We're going to hold her up either way. If
exactly.
George didn't do anything, then we're going to let him get on with what is left of his life that has virtually been destroyed. And let's be done with it. And then say, okay, what can we do now? And I think maybe, just maybe, if there's ever an opportunity, because it's happened before, y'all, where Ms. Fulton and George can do a program together.
Now, wouldn't that be something?
But it's happened before where, you remember the woman that accused this one man of rape? And
yes.
he went to prison for like 15 years and he got out because she picked the wrong guy in the lineup?
Yes.
They do programs all across this country and they're the best
together.
Of friends now.
Mm-hmm.
So forgiveness is more powerful. Good people outnumber everybody else and good is going to win over evil. That's it. Amen. Talk to y'all tomorrow or Monday night.
Cheryl, I'm going to leave it on that because that is an upbeat note. Good will always triumph over evil. Thank you so much. Michael in Minnesota, thank you very much. And Cheryl McCollum, thank you. And thanks to everybody in the chat room. We love it. We're going to be back Monday night. Actually, we'll be back Sunday night. We won't be talking about George Zimmerman, but I will have my regular Sunday show, which I do every single Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern. We'll be talking about other true crime cases as well. And then Monday night, we're back with Cheryl and Michael to talk about the George Zimmerman trial. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and the guests, so do remember that. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from websleuth.com, LLC, and forumsforjustice.org. In other words, if you get upset at something you hear on this show, come to me. Don't blame the forums. Come to Trisha's True Crime Radio, and we'll try and make you happy again. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crimes and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.